This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Okay, folks, I think everybody's got their drinks and stuff now, so it's that time of the evening when we have to think of entertaining questions to ask our readers, and there's no Justin tonight, so I'm going to have to come up with them all by myself. Let's start with you, Tom. Your central character is not a terribly nice person. I suspect that some of us were rather rooting for the monster, although I did wonder while we were going through it whether this was some ex-girlfriend that you were getting your own back on. So why did you decide to set her up as a rather selfish person before killing her off?
This is a great, great question, because it's based on a real person. And the best thing is, when I was writing the story, I had the concept in my head, and then I wasn't sure to have it as a male or female character, because I'm trying for parity in my short story collection. And I thought, well, I don't want to come across as misogynistic, but I needed sort of more female characters. I was just double second guessing myself. So I went on Twitter, and I just went, who wants to be the protagonist of my next story, By the Way You Drown? And my friend Meta went, pick me, you drown me, that's absolutely fine. And she's the wife of my friend Chris, and we famously didn't get on when we first met. And I was like, you've asked for a world of hurt here, Meta. And so it's all cranked up to 11, and she's read the story and she loves it. And she's taking pictures of her next to lakes, going, "Oh, look at me!" I've made Chris like extra stupid as well and stuff like that. But that is my Chris impression. That's, yeah, he's northern. That's how he sounds to me. And yeah, so it was actually really hard to write the ending because of that, because it was I'm drowning my friend. And it was like the initial setup, making this awful woman. But then, she massively loves Green Day, and she does have these huge Billy Joe's her one fantasy person. So it was great adding all those elements to it. And then, but it was always the underlying plot that I always had was it's about a control freak who loses complete control, and just following that. And I also wanted it to be rather than a what I usually have with my horror is that it's a slow creeper where it sort of like brings in. And I thought, no, I want to completely discombobulate the reader in the same way that I'm doing it with the central character. So it's, the land of the perfect day for the first half. And then, bam, there's just that turn in the middle and then everything's shit. The first bit was great. The second part was really hard because it's my friend. But everyone's had the same reaction of just like, oh, she's horrible. I'm so glad she drowns. And I was like, have you met Meta? She's lovely. That's not how I think of all Hungarians. It's just one I had to get some perfect revenge on. But she loves it, so it's all worked out well.
Of course, I'm now worried that you're going to write some other of your friends into your books. Have I done anything awful that I could upset Tom with that I'll be killed off in one of his books? But the setting, the mountain lake. I mean, clearly, the mysterious mountain lakes, good place for horror novels, and indeed for drowning people after FinCon. Although we were actually told that if you got eaten while you were in the lake at Finland, it was probably going to be a giant pike. But apparently they do that, or at least they scare the children with that sort of thing. But mountain lakes, good location.
Yeah, I mean the actual setting itself came out. It's such a cliche thing, but it came out of a dream where I was in a dream with some friends, beautiful crystal clear water, and everyone's getting near the coast and getting out. And then I couldn't, and I was drifting further away from the edge. And I thought, oh, what's going on here? And looking down, I couldn't see anything. And then that's when I woke up, and I thought, oh, there's something here. There's something to that. And when it was chosen Meta, and her and Chris actually live in Budapest at the moment, and I was like, okay, what's in Hungary? And there is actually this giant lake in Hungry, and I thought, okay, yeah, so these things started sort of like piecing together, and I liked the idea of just having this little mountain remote place. And then my friend, the late, great David J. Roger, wanted some Lovecraftian element to it, and he was just like, oh, you know, sort of, can you have like some portals or something? Can you meet somebody? And I was like, I'll put some low-lying mist. How's that for you? And I was just like, you know, because Lovecraft's really not my thing. I'm far more of a M.R. James fan. But I was just like, I'll put some very tiny little touches for him. So it was just, having it at high altitude. So it just sort of like came out of that, really.
You could have had a little tiny tentacle, surely. it reminds me, actually, that wasn't it last time we had Steph Burgess here and her book was set in Hungary? So we got a Hungary kick going on here. People obviously not getting enough food at BristolCon or something like that. Tim, while we were talking during the break, you mentioned that this is actually the first part of a trilogy. Is that right?
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned that. It's, funnily enough, going to be called the Relics Trilogy, and this is the first novel. The second one is Borderlands, and the third one is The Lonely, and I've not written either of them yet, even though I finished this one about 15 months ago. It's not going to be published till early next year. So it's going to be a trilogy. They're going to be very loosely linked. The story's going to be standalone, but some of the characters are going to cross over. So obviously it's a world where these relics still, where these creatures still exist.
So the next question, obviously, is what have you been doing in the intervening time?
Part of the reason the book's not out until next year is that Titan also asked me to write a Predator and Alien trilogy. So that's now finished, and the third one, the first one was Predator Incursion, the second one was Alien Invasion, and the third one is AVP Armageddon. And it's one big space battle story. But because of licensing, they had to have one book had to be a Predator book, and another one had to be an Alien, and the third one had to be AVP. But the same characters all the way through. It's interesting what you're saying about writing, Tom, about your friend. I wanted to write a vast, epic space military novel. So there were dozens of characters, and I've used all the names on the book spines on my wall behind me. So I went on Facebook and said, does anyone want to be in a novel that I'm writing? You're going to get your face bitten off by a predator, or you're going to get implanted with a xenomorph. And I had hundreds of people asking. So I've killed so many good friends in the last 15 months. It's been fantastic. And a couple of people who I think, well, bit of a wanker, deserves to die. So I can't identify which were which, obviously. So I did that for Titan. And I'm writing thrillers for Avon as well. So my second one is out next month. So as well as this trilogy, which has taken a long time, there's other stuff ticking over too.
So to come back to the world of relics, obviously you've got the satyr, you've got the nymph. It sounds a little bit like Greek mythology stuff, but I think you mentioned unicorn horns earlier on. So are you throwing everything into the mix?
Yep. Pretty much. There's all sorts of creatures in there. Yeah, in relics, I don't want to give too much away, really, but yeah, there's all sorts of fantastical creatures that once sort of not ruled the Earth, but were superior to humans on Earth. And as humanity's risen, these creatures have sort of faded into the background. Most of them are quite happy with that, the survivors. They're quite happy being living in the shadows and doing what they want to do and just not being seen. But there's a certain element amongst them that is starting to think that humans are really fucking us off now. It's about time we sort of came back and sorted them out. So that's one plot strand that'll carry on through the trilogy.
I've probably been watching Clash of the Titans and complaining about cultural appropriation. Anybody here got any questions for us, Dark?
So both of you have a watery theme going on in both your stories and lots of the everyday. So it's actually a question for both of you. What is it about the combination of the kind of banal, everyday, something like a Lilo or a swimming pool with fantastical or horrific that makes it such a sort of potent mix?
I think for me, my favourite types of horror are the horrors that really ring true. It's just that sort of like, oh, that could happen, or the sensations that could happen to me, and people really being able to relate to it. And with my, you know, sort of collection, it's all about different but very real phobias. And so this was very much, you know, fear of drowning. And I remember certainly being a kid that, you know, if I couldn't see the bottom of a swimming pool or, you know, a body of water, it's just like, what's there? And the overactive imagination always getting a bit fearful. I wasn't the strongest swimmer anyway. And so it was really quite nice to sort of like tap into area that seems safe, in areas that seem, you know, sort of idyllic, like, you know, a beautiful mountain lake, that there are unseen horrors. And it's just, yeah, I like making things that look banal scary, so it's just, you know, sort of because it's the least expected.
Yeah, I totally agree, actually. I like this Relics is set in London. It's a very, very London novel, to the extent that I had a bit of a discussion with my editor who wanted me to set it in the US, and I said I really can't. It's a London-based novel, so the setting's really important. And I think the fact that virtually everyone who reads it would have been to London, and they'll identify some of the areas. And the swimming pool thing is actually, it is a swimming pool I used to swim in when I was a kid, and that helped me. It's not there anymore, the pool, I don't think, or if it is, nobody's been there for a while. So that helped me describe it. But the fear of, interesting you mentioned the fear of swimming as well. I think I swim quite a bit in open water, and there's always that little tingle of fear when you see a jellyfish and it only looks as big as your fist, and you hope that's because it's a foot away and not 50 feet down, because if it is, then it's fucking huge. So yeah, it's the fear of the banal is what brings horror home more, I think. That's why, I mean, I went through a Lovecraftian phase. I think I've come out the other side a little bit. I still, you know, tentacles, you can't go wrong with a tentacle in a story. But I prefer situations and locations that the people recognize and then mess them up a bit.
Yeah, one of the things you learn about swimming in Australia is that the little jellyfish are just as dangerous as the big ones. Any other questions? Tom?
Strangely enough, this question isn't for me. For the benefit of the people on the podcast, I'm going to address the elephant in the room. For those who don't know, Tim is a satyr. And so I just wanted to ask, with Ballas, yeah, with Ballas, is this the first time you've written yourself into a story? And do you tend to find yourself writing a story yourself into any of your stories?
I won't go for the obvious comment. I have got quite hairy legs, has to be said. I think... seriously though, autobiographical elements inevitably creep into any story you write, I think. I'm trying to think of something from... I mean, the thriller I wrote last year called The Hunt, it was the first non-fantastical bit of writing I'd ever had published. I think it was my 35th novel, and it was the first novel that didn't have any fantastical or horror or supernatural elements to it. And it was about the main character. My wife read it and said, "My God, it's you." And I thought, oh shit, what did he do? but I sort of got into endurance sport and stuff recently, and it's about a guy, it's a chase story about a guy being chased across the Welsh mountains. And I enjoy running in the mountains and things like that, but I don't often get shot at like he did. So it's of, you know, there's lots of autobiographical elements creeping. So how about you? Do you find that?
I mean, certainly that, you know, it's been therapeutic to address some of my own fears and phobias in the collection, but I quite like the objective sort of looking at and creating well-rounded characters. But I guess, you know, sort of the key thing with horror is, you know, sort of like, well, what would I do in that situation? I don't like, you know, stupid people running up the stairs and stuff like that. And one of the best comments I got from someone who read this story, A Day at the Lake, they're like, shit, they're smarter than me. I would have just panicked and drowned immediately. And there's this whole, like, trying to swim or, you know, sort of, like, pacing themselves and, you know, sort of, like, counting to keep track of time and thinking through all the sort of, like, possible ways of things. Like, none of that. I would have just screamed and then drowned. So I like the fact that they sort of, like, oh, this is a smart character who's completely, you know, literally out of their depth. And I try and sort of create, you know, it is that, what would I do? What's the non-stupid thing that even if you do all the smart things, you're still going to get? And so it's I like that problem solving and looking at it at all the different angles. And hopefully that just makes it a little bit extra scary.
Any more questions for either of our readers? Pat?
Question for Tim. When you said about your editor suggesting setting something in the U.S., what would you do if you had to, would you actually go there or just do a lot of research?
If my publisher was willing to fly me, yeah, that's never going to happen. I've been to the States, obviously, so if I had future books in the series are going to be set in the States, the second one's going to be set around Boston, where I've been, and my good friend Chris Golden lives near Boston, and I'm going over there again next year, so that's tax deductible, that trip, because that's going to be for research. But Chris and I wrote a novel, we wrote a series of novels called Hidden Cities, Novels of the Hidden Cities, and one of them was set, the Map of Moments was set in New Orleans, and Chris had been there and I'd never been there. And I couldn't afford to go on a research trip to New Orleans, to be honest. So we just did a huge amount of research, and it was not only New Orleans, it was post-Katrina New Orleans, which even now is very sensitive at the time we wrote it. It was, I think we wrote it maybe 2 years after the hurricane. So we were very conscious of wanting to portray it as it was and be fair to the city and the people. And we had just some great feedback. We had one letter from somebody who lives there saying, you've really paid tribute to the city and you've obviously been here loads. And I didn't have the heart to say, actually, it's mostly Google and books. You know, I'd read a couple of great books about the one particular. Chris Rose wrote a book called One Dead in Attic, which is an amazing account of the hurricane and its aftermath. And it just sort of shows the power of research, I think. But I do love going places. And I'll do the converse. So if I go on holiday somewhere, I'll then write somewhere, set where I've been, so I can tax deduct my part of the holiday. Top tips, people. It works.
Yeah, you get all the best writing tips on here. New Orleans is a fabulous place, but you're quite right. You can't afford to go there on a research trip because you'll end up spending a fortune on food, which is just the way it is. You mentioned the Alien and Predator stuff and the strictures that you were operating under. How do you find doing this franchise stuff?
I've done a fair bit of tie-in stuff now, actually, and I'm doing another novelization imminently that I've signed one of these silly NDAs, so I can't even tell you what it is, but it's a new movie coming out soon. But I really love doing my own stuff, and the tie-in stuff is good fun, and it I make a living writing. You know, so you know what I'm saying. You sometimes have to do something to get by, you know. So I really do enjoy the tie-in stuff. And the strictures aren't that tight, actually. I've never found... I did a Star Wars novel, and I said yes instantly, and before even knowing when the novel was set. And then the editor got in touch with me and said, you're writing the first novel in the Star Wars timeline, 25,000 years before A New Hope. And I was so relieved because it meant I didn't have to go and read a load of other Star Wars novels, which would have been horrific, but because there's about 150 of them. But with that and with the Alien and Predator stuff, the story's all my own and the characters are my own. And the only there's a guy at Fox called Josh Izzo. He's a great guy. It's his job at 20th Century Fox to make sure all the tie-in stuff works. So for Alien and Predator, it's probably easier than Star Wars, because Star Wars, if you destroy a planet that they want to use three novels down the line, then they're screwed. So you need to be quite careful with what you're doing. But the Alien Predator timeline gets changed around quite a bit anyway. So what's canon and what isn't canon is debatable sometimes. So for my trilogy, it's far future anyway. It's 2692, I think, the Rage War takes place. So it's after all the films that have been made so far. But I did do a plan for the trilogy and got it okayed, and then they announced Alien 5. So I thought, oh shit, that's going to really mess it up. So I had to have long discussions with this guy at Fox, and it turned out it didn't actually mess it up. But the interesting bit of that was that I was told what happens in Alien 5, and I like real ale, so after this, if anyone wants... if I wasn't driving, you'd probably get it out of me after about 5 pints of Old Thumper, but maybe not tonight.
We'll drag you along to Bristol Con, always assuming that the film won't be out by then, and you can tell us all then. Any more questions? No? Has anybody got any announcements? Joe, can you remember what's happening next month?
Yes, I can. I can remember what's happening next month. We've got Scott Lewis and Joe Lindsay Wharton coming in, so that will be good. 19th, is that a Monday? something like that. Sometime in the middle of next month on a Monday. And Scott will be here if he is not saving the planet, and Joe will definitely be here.
All right, and Pete isn't here, presumably the 15th. Okay, the 15th is a Monday in August. Pete is presumably rushing off to Paris or something like that because his job has been thrown into confusion by politics. So he hasn't got the announcements either. Has anybody else got any book launches or anything? Yeah, oh, Joe.
Yeah, Summer Goddess is launching at FantasyCon on the Friday, so you all have to be there.
It's in Scarborough, Joe. Yeah, well, okay. And what are the dates of FantasyCon? Something or other in September? 23rd of September. Yep. You've got a couple of months to get up to Scarborough. Even if you're walking, you might be able to get there. Alrighty. So I think that's it. Right. Yes. And now we are done, I think. next month with Scott and Joe Lindsay Walton. Okay. Thank you, everybody.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.